Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on St. Patrick's Day, Monday, March 17th, 2025. I am Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney and Cassidy Palmer. It was a successful week for the Indiana Hoosiers baseball program. They went 4-0, winning a midweek game in Terre Haute against Indiana State before coming home to sweep the Ohio State Buckeyes. That brings Indiana's Big Ten record to 4-2 and overall record to 11-9. A fun tidbit that I got this from SID Jared Rigdon, the four games were all a different number of innings. So the run rule walk-off was in 8 innings. The dominant Sunday walk-off was in, not walk-off, but run rule was in 7 innings. The game at Indiana State was your typical 9 inning, and the rally to force extra innings and walk-off the Buckeyes was in 10 innings. For that game, Hogan Denny came off the bench. He got 2 hits, including the walk-off, and he also played second base in between those 2 hits, which Coach Mercer said he learned how to do that earlier in that same week. Denny was recognized as the Big Ten's Freshman of the Week for his week worth of efforts. He's really been hitting well. In the 4 games, Indiana did well pretty much in all phases, including, knock on wood, did not commit a single error for the entire week. Well, a lot went right for the Hoosiers. But red belts are red belts like any week, and only one red belt for each one. So we don't envy the work you got to do here, Chris. Who's going to get the hardware?
Thanks, Carl. Well, the way I put it together, I mean, whenever we get a big comeback like that, you know, it's a memorable game, right? It's the Hogan Denny game now, of course. He walks it off twice, right? He hits the home run foul, and then, you know, then he really walks it off after that. You know, that's, you know, if a game gets a name, and it's just something that's, it's important. It's a game you remember, right? The Matt Lloyd game, I sent something out today because it's his birthday, you know, when he hit the walk-off. So then you start to look back at, like, the anatomy of the comeback. Like, how did it really happen? Like, we were down 4 in the 8th inning, right? And you could say that, yeah, it was just the bats in the 8th. But if you go back, I mean, all, I'm giving out all the red belts just from the one game. That's the way I've done this. And you go all the way back to the 4th inning when Devin Taylor hoses the guy at the plate. That's a huge moment, right? They got a continued score, right? They would have had 6 then instead of 5. And the inning's still going. It's more pitches. You don't know what's going to happen after that. And, you know, I don't know why they even went to the video replay. You know, in my little bleacher seat up against the brick wall there, I could tell the guy was out. But, you know, they had to, you know, due diligence, I guess. They went to the tape. The 2 dopes went inside, looked at the thing, and realized, yeah, everybody was right. He's out. So Devin Taylor gets the Tony Butler Award. And then Coach Gilly, okay? The man, after that happened, after the, you know, the 4 runs, after the comeback, he comes out there like a closer. Like, well, tie game, you bring in your closer at home, right? That's what you do. And he comes out there in the 9th inning. I think he threw like 6 pitches or something. He barely was even out there. And the crowd was fired up. I mean, I haven't seen a crowd like that in a while. Like, I mean, it was just something special. And you know, I heard in the post game, he said he had to like turn up the pitch count or something because he couldn't hear it. People were banging on the bleachers. Everybody's yelling. It was really great. So, you know, Cole Gilley for his 7 out performance, and he did get 7 outs, okay? So, you know, it's a strikeout, drop, throw, third, but the guy was on. But that's 7 outs. So Cole Gilley got 7 outs, all right? And, I mean, and the Gravelin's one of them. The guy who had gone 460 a couple innings earlier off of Kraft, and that we know has monster power, and that, I mean, the air would have just came out of the balloon if that ball would have went over the fence. But you know what? It didn't. So not only did he go up against probably the best power hitter, he gets 7 outs, back in the dugout. And then so he gets the Joey Donato Red Belt Award of the Week. And then you're going to go, you know, Mr. Walkoff, Mr. Double Walkoff, Hogan Denny. You mentioned it, Big Ten Player of the Week. He was 6-for-10. He had 10 ABs. That's all he had. He had 10 ABs over the week, over the 4 games. He gets 6 hits. He plays 3 different positions, if you count the H as a position. Plus, he pinch hits. I mean, this guy was Mr. Everything. And he walks off winner. It was just great. It was so special to see that, especially for a young guy. You know, I think we're going to see a lot of special things from Hogan Denny in the future. But, it just reminds me of like Pine hitting a walk-off as a freshman, or Gorski hitting a walk-off at Victory Field. Like, it's a special moment. And it was just, I don't know, the place was rocking, man. It really was. And it reminded me of some really like games that you remember. So Hogan Denny gets the Alex Dickerson Award. Those are your three, Denny, Taylor, and Gilly for this week. And as far as Pro Bowl, Hoosiers, and highlights, it's funny. When I was going over to my head, I didn't think that was that many. And then we talked before the show, and it's quite a bit, actually. For the spring breakout, Connor Foley came in, and he got a save, just the one walk. He closed out the Royals. They used him. That's how, they're thinking about Connor Foley when they already had him lined up to close out the game. They had their lead. They put him in there. He closed it out and got the save. Brock Tibbetts got a hit. I don't know if a lot of you guys saw it, but we'll just call it a line drive in the box score with two RBIs. You can go to David Welch's Twitter if you want to see the video. And then surprisingly, which we weren't told, Philip Glasser was even on a spring breakout roster, but he got in the game for the Nationals, two for two, a double, a walk, a steal. Glad we know Glasser. He does it all. He's just like a pro's pro. I can't wait to see him in the big leagues. He's getting called up. He does it all. So I can't wait to see Philip get there. Of course, it has to be in the NL East because all the Hoosiers end up in the NL East against the Mets in some way. Let's see. Matt Gorski with his fourth home run. That gives him 12 RBIs for the spring. I don't see how he can't make this Pirates team. It just bothers me that it doesn't, It's the Pirates. Just let Gorski just get up there and have fun. And finally, Kyle Hart. He threw three innings, had three strikeouts. So as spring training rolls on, there's Hoosiers everywhere. You really take a look at it, and you can always find, IU somewhere. And it's just, it depends, I guess, where you're looking. And if you go to at Pro Bowl Hoosiers, you go to David Welch's Twitter, and I try to find what I can for the IU Base 17 and send it out. But we're gonna have some major league Hoosiers coming soon. Especially Craig Yoho, like he isn't getting enough press. He's throwing ninjas, left and right. I feel like not even having to mention him anymore because everybody knows about him. He's so national now. But I would think Craig makes his roster too for the Brewers. That's it for the pros and the belts. We're going to go to Cass for the preview of our midweek game against Evansville. Cass, what do you got?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So Hoosiers take on the Purple Aces at the BART, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Tuesday, tomorrow from when we're recording this. And the Purple Aces are currently 5-14, and they are 4-13 away from home. The big thing, they are, at least as of last night, I didn't look to see if it updated, but 269th in the RPI. They have a win versus Southern Indiana, where they won 13-0. They did split a four-game series with Mizzou. They each took two games, and they beat Central Arkansas twice. They are currently 0-4 in midweeks, including games against Lipscomb, Kentucky, SEMO, Southeast Missouri, and SIU Edwardsville. The pitching in midweeks, similar to IU, they expect to see about six pitchers per game. However, they're giving up 14.5 earned runs per game in the midweeks, including 21 earned runs against Kentucky. The staff has a 9-flat ERA and a 1.95 whip. So they are allowing almost two walks and hits per inning. They're averaging, they actually aren't too bad on the walks front. 4.5 walks per game to seven strikeouts. They have given up 23 home runs in the 19 games. And they have a .329 batting average against, which pairs up real well with the Hoosiers' .317 batting average. As for who might start, RJ James has started two out of the four midweeks, and he has a 17.76 ERA in 12 2/3 innings of work. Will he start? I don't know. But he started, they played a double midweek last week. He started one of those and he started the week before. So it's a possibility. On the offensive side, they're hitting .260 as a team, which isn't the worst we've seen, but isn't great. They've hit just 8 home runs in 19 games so far this season. They don't walk a ton, about 4 walks a game compared to 9 strikeouts, but they are 25 for 28 in stolen base attempts. So they do run fairly frequently, and they're usually successful when they do so. But something to note is that opponents are 44 of 49 in stolen base attempts. So that's about 2 per game. I would not be surprised to see the Hoosiers go pretty aggressive on the base paths, given that statistic. Even with the bit of a rough offense, there are a couple of bats to watch. First one is Ty Rumsey. He's a senior center fielder, typically bats leadoff. He's hitting .370 and he's 12 for 14 in stolen bases, so he's a good chunk of their running. And the second bat is Harrison Talbert, who's a senior right fielder, mostly bats in the two hole. He's .343 on the year, but he has 4 home runs, which is half of the team's total. And so we do know that the Hoosiers are expecting to throw at least 5 guys, and they'll be starting with Cole Gilley because he only had the 2 innings on the weekend, so he's pretty well rested. So I wouldn't expect him to go super long. I never expect anybody on a midweek to go super long. But we will be starting with Gilley. And the moral of the story this midweek is we cannot lose to these guys. They are 269th in the RPI. That would be a ridiculously bad loss coming off of what was a very solid week
It's
before
especially
that.
sad because this was a super regional team last year.
Right. Yeah, and they are just struggling in pretty well all facets
I'm
this
sure they
year.
turned that was a very senior heavy team that
Yeah.
included Kip Fugers last year, so
Right. So yeah, that would be, usually we don't put a whole lot of stock in most midweeks, because midweeks are funky. Midweeks are funky for just about everybody. But this one would be a bad loss.
And
They
they were
were
the
the
last team to beat Tennessee, though.
That
Didn't they
is
run through the
true.
World
That
Series?
is
And they're undefeated
accurate.
now.
That is
So,
accurate.
gotta give Evansville that. They've been the last team to beat Tennessee out of anybody. That's
That
wild. Because they lost the game 3 against them.
yep, that is correct. Which is crazy to think now at what I say, 5 and 14 on the year.
And they ran the table in Omaha. They're 20-0 now. That team beat them.
But really don't want the loss there, especially with just after that, the Hoosiers heading to sunny California to play new Big Ten foe UCLA. Chris, I'm going to pass it back to you for that preview.
Thanks, guys. Yep, spring break is California bound for the Hoosiers. To play the 13th RPI UCLA Bruins. They're 16-4. They will be coming off a 5-game winning streak because they don't have a midweek game. So we could be a 5-game winning streak. We'll knock on wood if we take care of those Tennessee beaters. And we'll see what happens. So let's see there. That'll be Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern, and Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. So this is definitely not on our normal game times, just mix them in with the madness. You know what I'm saying? You got the tourney brackets, you got your TVs, you get the Hoosiers on Big Plus against UCLA on one. You got all the different, March Madness going on your other TVs. It could be a really, really fun weekend. I'm looking forward to it. First time, I don't know if it's the first time we've ever played them. It probably is. I can't say I looked that up, but I would assume this is probably one of the few times we've ever played UCLA and to go out there for a series and even one win. I mean, on the road against a team that's this high up in the RPI would be huge for us. I know that. They play at Jackie Robinson Stadium. And, from what I've been reading, it sounds like, real diehard crowd. The crowd's into it. It's going to be, a good atmosphere for the guys to play in. Now, this team, they can score, okay? They can absolutely score, these Bruins. When I was younger, I used to do this pool, and you'd all throw in $20, and it'd be like, I think, 10 of us, and you'd all get three teams, the MLB teams or whatever it was. And every time they scored one run, two runs, three runs, you'd go all the way up to 21. And if somehow they had games where they went all the way up to 21, you'd win the pot. And some, whoever had the most wins at that point would. This team would be great for that because they've scored 11 once, twice, 12 once, 15 twice, 16 once, 18 once, and 22 once. So these guys can score runs. We're going to definitely, it's going to be a challenge, absolutely, for us. They're coming off of beating UC Irvine at home, who's a ranked team, and then sweeping Nebraska. So, they've also they won the Sunday game against Maryland, so that's the five that they're on a roll. And we'll see what we can do against them. As far as a couple of bats to watch, it seems like a ton of their offense comes from like the 3-4 hole. And that's the shortstop Rock Chekalowski. Definitely not how you say that, but I do my best. Seven home runs and 26 RBIs for Rock. And then there's Mulivai Levu, seven home runs, 27 RBIs for him. And he's a first baseman. So between the two of them, it's 48 total bases for one guy, 47 total bases for the other. And then when he went down the list, the next guy was like 31 total bases. So it's really coming from these two bats. And they're absolutely, going to be, as that lineup turns, every time you get 3-4, it's something to pay attention to because that's where they get their runs. Let's see. Couple of arms to look at. We got this reliever, Justin Lee. He's a righty. He has 11 appearances. He's 2-0, and he has a 0.87 ERA. When Justin Lee comes in, that's going to be a challenge, I would think. They also have Michael Barnett. It looks like they've moved him into a starter role because he was doing so good as a reliever. He's 5-0 in six appearances, which is pretty wild. He has 26 Ks in 19 innings. He pitched one of the weekend games last year, last weekend for them. 5 innings, 5 hits, 1 K. I mean, 1 run, 7 Ks. He's 6'4", 220. He's a big fella. I would think he's gonna be pitching one of the weekend games. And then the other two, the probables, I would think, is Cody DelVecchio, another righty. 5 innings, 5 hits, no runs. It was his performance last weekend. And Willen Ross. He's got a 2.70 ERA. He's 1-0. They're all right-handers, though. I noticed, like all their major pitchers are righties. Not one L on my sheet of paper yet. All R circle, R circle, R circle.
That is
That's
good
just
news.
something. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, as it keeps happening, I was like, is it what I want or is it what I'm seeing? And it was really what I was seeing. So that was cool. A couple other little, nitpicks to that, not nitpicks, but little some small facts. The pitching has only given up 16 home runs the whole season. So to think about that, like Corbin Dickinson has 10, right? If like that one person has 10 home runs, and the whole season they've only given up 16 total, so they're not giving up the long ball. Another thing I noticed, they have 41 hit by pitches. They've played 20 games. I don't know if these guys are trying to get hit, but it's like 2 hit by pitches a game. So I don't know if that's part of their strategy or something, but that's something to look at too. Honestly, it's going to be a challenge. You got to look at it the way it is. This is a very good baseball team. They're 16-4 for a reason. They're blowing people's doors off. So we want to keep the games close, maybe, see what happens late. I was so impressed on game two of Friday that with the comeback and being able to, keep a game tight game and actually win one, right? We've had a lot of Charlie Browns in these tight games and they just pull the ball away. And for the team to step up big time, on that game too, it was really good. One pitcher of ours that I want to put as it was a Trey Telfer, right? When he pitched that eighth inning, and I wanted to make sure I didn't get past mentioning him. It sounds like, for him to get put in that situation down four, you'd say, well, okay, it's a 4-run game, we'll lose it, we'll throw Trey. But he impressed, right? Maybe he's going to get put in some more high leverage situations. He doesn't throw that zero up there. Who knows what happens with the comeback? So did he get a red belt? No, but I want to definitely throw his name in there. Carl, you're going to have us Big Ten picks, reviews, and previews coming up next, right?
Yep. So I want to just kind of point now that we've got 2 weeks in. If you go to iubase.com, at the top there, you'll be able to select the Big Ten standings. We keep a pretty unique set of standings here in that we break the ties. So there is a straight 1 through 17 for every team. There's every tie is broken. Now, this early in the season, I don't go into massive detail to do this. I'm just doing RPI because that's the break all. And well, when you have, I think right now, technically, there are six teams tied for third place. The tie breaks are all RPI, which has Indiana as fifth in the Big Ten out of 17. Another big change this year is with the additional four teams and going to a pod structure in the tournament in Omaha in May. 12 teams will make the Big Ten tournament instead of the eight as it's been in the past. So 12 teams will make the tournament, but just like last year, five teams will not make the tournament. So you'll see those numbers. Obviously, it's some of the a lot of these teams have only played one series because they load up on the byes in the first 2 weeks. Several teams though have played, and currently UCLA is the number one team in the conference because they do have a better RPI than Oregon, who is by the media ranked number ninth. By D1 baseball, they're ranked ninth in the country. They're the only ranked team in the Big Ten at present. But UCLA is knocking on the door of that, and it would be rather nice if Indiana could possibly spoil those with a series
Shut the
win.
door on. Shut it right on.
Now, I'm with Chris. I would not be, if Indiana beats Evansville and then manages to take one in LA, I think that's an acceptable weekend. But at the same time, there is some ground that needs to be covered. So,
Depends when we get the one, Carl, because you know how we'll get. If we win Friday or Saturday, we're going to be greedy. And we're going to want to win the series. So I think it really depends on which one we get. If we do only get the one out there, And listen, let's play for the series on Sunday. I'm not saying we can't do that, but I just wanted people to really understand, these guys are no joke. These are real teams.
Well, and the other piece of this is, in the RPI, especially when you're playing a really high RPI team that has a lot of wins and is going to end the season with a lot of wins, going on the road, this series is the one that replaces that traditional first or second going to an SEC school in the structure of the whole season. This is the one that replaces that compared to prior years. And in general, winning one is like in 2020 when Indiana went and got the Sunday game against LSU. That was the one, And now you obviously want this team to do better, and so far we think they're capable. We'll get into that in our roundtable when we're going to kind of talk about how we think pitching is going to be going forward. But I think it's possible. If you look at the rest of the league, there are some surprises. There were some, there was. You hear the national media, and they're always going to be as positive as possible as many of these teams. And this is at the point at which we're kind of separating the, okay, maybe this team actually is really good versus, okay, yeah, maybe we overspoke about that. Now, part of that is Nebraska has been very disappointing, but a lot of that is that you get you lose your ace pitcher right before conference play starts, and they're just reeling from that. But yeah, Nebraska struggling at 1-5. Rutgers had a run a couple years ago, but they've just not been playing well. Ohio, and we saw firsthand Ohio State is, they've got a new coach. It's probably going to take a year or two for them to kind of recover from this whole process, and they're just not definitely on the mound and on defense. Ohio State has not been great. Maryland had a real tough series. They played UCLA. That's all they've done. Hearing a lot of good things about Maryland, but we've just yet to see it. South Carolina. Sorry, South Carolina. What am I saying? The
Different
USC.
U.S. team.
Listen, you never know at this point. We're just picking up teams everywhere.
USC, Southern California, they're 2-4 in the league, but that's because they lucked out by getting Oregon first weekend. So they actually won their second week, but they're only 2-4. Sweeps matter. And this is the thing I'll say about Indiana. Sweeping Ohio State was a big deal. The difference between a win and a sweep is a big deal. If you can get a sweep, you want to get that sweep. And that's what's got UCLA and Oregon at the top of the conference. Penn State is taking care of business. They've won two series. Purdue won their series. We're all waiting for when is Purdue gonna become Purdue again? Usually they've revealed themselves by now, but so far they're actually they're they've they won it, they won a series. So
Yeah, but have they played anyone yet?
who did they beat in the first?
Minnesota.
Yeah,
Oh,
and well, and that
yeah.
was the other thing is like
And
they're.
Minnesota's.
And again, it's like,
Minnesota was coming in smoking hot in the
yeah.
non-con.
And so they, and so far they've kind of struggled, but then again, they just beat Oregon, so
Yeah.
they've at least won one game against all these crazy tough teams they've played. So it's Minnesota's a little tough to figure out,
Yeah.
but there's overall, I feel this is the strongest I've seen the Big Ten in a really long time, if possibly ever. You just there's a few teams that I mentioned at the beginning of this that may turn out to be, in that bottom five group. But it's also possible we're gonna end up with a good team that's at the top of that bottom five group and doesn't make the tournament, doesn't make the Big Ten tournament. And of course the key there is to play well. Execute. Well, remember Maryland last year. Maryland would have been in the NCAA tournament if they could have just made the Big Ten tournament, and they didn't. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes going forward. What we will do now, though, is go into our Big Ten pick'em, which last week Zach passed up Chris. Zach had a 5-0 week. He picked all five series right. Chris struggled, 2-3. Sorry, Chris.
Two and three used to be a good week for me.
Yeah.
Now it's struggling.
Well, but you're still in second place. You're only a series out, so
I'll take it.
you're ready to return this next week.
Oh yeah.
I at least got out of the gutter. I'm at 5-6 now after a 4-1 week. I still am a series behind Cass, and then Josh is tied with Chris there in second place. So it will. We've got another week, and this time we only have one bye. So this is seven series to pick. Let's have Cass start us off.
Okay. Well, after whiffing on that Michigan State pick last week, almost all of us whiffed on that one. I'm gonna go with Penn State. I trust them a little bit more. I'm gonna go Northwestern over Illinois, mostly because home field. This one I've gone back and forth on. Because I don't trust either of them is the problem. I'm going to lean Michigan at Purdue. Again, I don't trust either of them. It could legitimately go either way. Even though they've largely struggled, like they've had some struggles, they're not as much as Ohio State, so I'm going Iowa. USC over Nebraska. We've kind of talked about Nebraska a little bit. I'm going with Oregon until they give me a reason not to. So, Oregon. And I am, this was another one that had me torn, but I am going to go with Maryland over Washington.
All right. Chris, how about you?
All right. I got an opposite of Cass on that Maryland pick. I'm definitely going Washington. We're going to stick with Oregon and USC. I got Iowa, Purdue. I'm taking Purdue this week again. So they worked out for me in week one. I'm going to go for them again now. Northwestern helped me out last week, so I'll stick with them. And I'll be honest, though, I spent a lot more time looking at my brackets the past 24 hours, figuring out parlays and sleepers and trying to come up with, some Final Four picks that maybe not everybody has than this week's picks. But maybe because I'm very high on Michigan State in the brackets, I'll take them this week in the baseball, and just for no other reason than I got a feeling on Michigan State. So and what are they, green and white? It's St. Paddy's Day. Michigan State for the weekly win.
The Tom Izzo effect.
There you go. What is it? February Izzo, April, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, Izzo is in March. So those are my picks for the week.
Okay. My picks, I'm going with Penn State. I'm pretty close to being sold on Penn State. Sorry, I'm not going to bet against the champs going to Northwestern. I mean, I know they're not as good as they were. I think Illinois wins that series. I didn't struggle with this. I'm taking Tracy Smith's Michigan team at Purdue. This is the week when Purdue reveals who they are.
Now my pick feels even better.
Iowa
I
had
know. I,
war.
I, the minute I said I'm taking Purdue in my head, I said, I hope Carl don't take them. And then, because then it would have backfired. But with Carl on the Michigan train this week, I'm liking my Purdue pick better.
No drama in the next three picks. All five of us are going with Iowa, USC, and Oregon. I'm saying that Maryland needs to break out, and this is the week they're going to do it. They're going to go win a series on the Pacific Coast. So I have Maryland taking over Washington. Josh, he has picked Penn State, Northwestern, Michigan, Iowa, USC, Oregon, and Washington.
Oh.
Zach, who is in the lead, is picking Penn State, Illinois, Michigan, Iowa, USC, Oregon, and Washington. So those are our picks. Those will be up on the site by Thursday at the latest. And we'll see how this breaks down. Looks like, yeah, Chris has the most, I think, differences from the rest of the group. So it could be it could be Chris takes back the lead, or he
He joins us.
yes, or he joins us. Yeah,
You got to risk a little to win a lot. Come on.
exactly. All right, so now we'll move into our roundtable. The 4-0 week was great, but just as we have had two podcasts where we've tried to calm everybody down and not panic.
No Chicken Little.
Yeah, the same thing happens when you have a great week, especially against a couple teams that, quite frankly, have new coaches going through big transitions, lots of struggles. So we don't want to get too high on what we've seen so far. Obviously, the concerns we have are really remain around the pitching staff. Coach Mercer very explicitly on Sunday said that they are looking to the 2023 model for how this pitching staff is going to be constructed going forward. That model has only one starting pitcher. In 2023, that was Luke Senard. In 2025, that is going to be Ben Grable. We're not even sure, with the strategy, it may make more sense to have him throw Saturday. I don't know. We'll see how this is
That's what
going to be
most
played
do.
out. And breaking up, the rest of the arms to use in shorter, more frequent stints, which is why you're seeing, Cole Gilley set to open tomorrow. He's probably only going to throw 2 innings, so that he'll be available for a stint at some point, probably later in the weekend. So let's talk about this model. Our thoughts on can it work, particularly as the team heads into a much, much more difficult phase of conference play. Playing the two Los Angeles teams in the next 2 weeks. So what are we thinking? Anybody, either one of you can jump in and start this conversation.
I mean, it's proven that it's worked, right? I mean, having Sinod be the Saturday, and the TBA was always Friday and Sunday. Unfortunately, when we got to the regional, we only got 4 innings out of Luke, and he got hurt. So, yeah, I mean, that isn't the way you wanted to play that out, but it certainly, that model worked. As much as would like a closer and three starters, but maybe it's just because I'm old and it's just not how it's done anymore. It's, he's proven that model can work. And the execution was much, much better this weekend, you know, defensively and on the mound. And that's what we wanted. So, you know, this is how he's going to deploy the pitchers. And instead of going with, you know, because what was it before? It would be Gilly, Seabolt, and then I guess if you would have flip-flopped it, maybe had Burr start, or you're going to have Grable start, however he was going to do it. But if he's going to go to the 23 mile, and he's telling us that, it's proven it could work. I mean, we were 2 seed in the – oh, no, we were 3 seed. 3 seed out there with West Virginia and Kentucky.
Yeah, but
It might be
thoroughly
the other
beat the
team.
two seed. So,
Oh, and they were – people were saying they were the best team in the pod or whatever. And, you know, it's been bad. You know, it's been rough, right? With all these runs we're scoring, and then we're giving them all back. And that didn't really happen. You know, it was fun being at the games. And it was the first time I was able to get to the bar because they keep moving these midweek games at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But it was great to be out there and, you know, scored a bunch. And we came back that one day. We played great defense. Denny threw a guy out at the plate, too. So, I mean, I'm sure that gives the pitching confidence too when your defense is now playing better, right? You don't have to be
Tyler
perfect.
Cerny makes SportsCenter, so.
Made SportsCenter,
Yeah, retire. Now, come on. You don't even have to do that. I don't know.
but it was fun.
It was fun to watch, but
Well,
you know what? Sign me
it
up for opposing guys at the plate when we need to stop some runs,
Oh, yeah.
too.
Oh, absolutely. But for me with Cerny, it was more, it was less about the play itself and more about the fact that it seems his mojo is back, at least in the field. Because he had, what, 6 errors in the first like 5 games?
I think it was actually, it might have been more than
He's
that.
at 7 total right now. And he's had none in the last 10. Not knock on wood again. But it was more, it's back to the Cerny we know. Because at the start of the season, that wasn't Tyler Cerny. We haven't
Well, it
seen
wasn't a
that.
lot of guys. We were throwing the ball all over the field.
Oh, absolutely. But with him in particular, it seemed concerning because he's been so much stronger than that consistently. So to me, that was more indicative of he's back where we expect him to be, and I'm hoping that that can kind of transfer into the bat as well
Well,
as he's
he showed a flash of that on Sunday. So,
So for me, it was less about the play itself and more, oh, hey, I think he's back. That was more important to me.
and if Tyler can get back at the plate, this offense is unstoppable. Because there's going to be base runners at multiple parts in the order. And if there's no holes there at the end, it's no holds barred when it comes to what this offense can produce from a run perspective.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and with the improved defense this past week, I mean, that's why you go 4-0. Pitchers don't have to feel, you know, as much stress on the mound, and the way coach is deploying them differently. Like Seabolt came out of the pen, right? Gilly comes out of the pen. You know, we'll see what happens. I have no problem with the model. I think it's proven that it works.
And to me, with as much unproven talent on the pitching mound, I don't dislike this model because it doesn't put a ton of stress and pressure on any one pitcher. So instead of seeing how far we can stretch a guy, it's really more, hey, this is your inning. Whatever happens, it's your inning, and build that up a bit.
Yeah. There's two sides to that coin though, and I think that's where the caution comes in, which is, and even they have shown this in the past, and especially last year, and it would be like, if we've got a guy who's cruising, we don't want to pull him out. And that's where they're going to have to fight back on this, is that there's got to be a cap on this, because you're going to need this guy again, you know, a couple days later. Now, if they're at the verge of, if it's Saturday They've won Friday and they're about to win the series.
And that.
I'm a little bit better with, okay, you know what? We're okay. Let's just go ahead and get this thing won and get out of here. So
But I'm also fully in favor of best available pitcher. Like, doesn't matter what their normal role is. Cole Gilley closing it out.
yeah.
Like
And
that.
that's what I'm really encouraged by is what we've seen so far is it's really about, okay, who's rested, who's up. It's not like massively planned out, oh, you're going to pitch here and you're going to pitch here and you're going to pitch here. We're going to have you throw a bullpen, figure out how you feel, and when you're available, you'll be in the list and we'll include you. And the only thing that's kind of preset is, Grable is going to start one of these games and try to go five, six innings. I think part of the advantage also just comes in that I think some of these guys they've got a good amount of pitches, but they're struggling to go deep. And the ability to, hey, we might be able to get, I mean, this is the thing. We didn't even think Darren Swanson was part of the mix. In
Even though
last
he's on
week,
the team.
yeah. Right, yeah, that's yeah, that to your point, Chris, yeah. But he's thrown 6.1 innings in the last week, which is would be a fantastic start.
But they still got a little greedy. I think Marcia got a little greedy putting him out there for the fourth inning.
Right.
And he
Both
paid for it a little
times.
bit.
Both times.
That's what I'm saying. But I
So
think it's a learning curve because these guys you
right.
don't know, right? And then you don't know what a guy is in the fourth inning, the second inning.
And because I think of it is that they're kind of seeing him as someone they think might be able to go a little bit deeper. Honestly, I don't think it's that big a deal. And in fact, I kind of looked at this and I was impressed. I'm like, now that if we add the guys that we think that they're trusting now, in a four game week, 36 innings is easy to cover. And also it's not going to be the same thing each week because you kind of you're Grable's going to get a full 6 days of rest, but the rest of these guys are going to get kind of 3 to 4 days of rest. But that means that they're not going to be able to fill the same role every week. So this week, well, Seabold pitched in the midweek last week. Gilly's going to pitch in the midweek this week. And I think it's going to kind of rotate like that, just based on, to Cass's point, how they're feeling on a particular day. Have they gotten enough rest in what they're able to accomplish?
And I also wonder, from a logistical perspective, does this make it a bit harder for opponents to scout? I mean, it's hard enough for us, like when we're doing our quick previews, for me, figuring out this midway, it was like you're gonna see probably six pitchers, might start with this guy, maybe. Like the unpredictableness makes it a little harder for they can scout Grable a bit. They know they're gonna see him. But beyond that, it's gonna be a little bit harder for teams to plan around
Well,
the pitching.
yeah, and the idea though is that Grable's got close to elite stuff, and that's the distinction. Seabold and Gilley have four pitches that makes them, but even still, it's like you can kind of tell. You get to that third time through the order, and they're a little bit they're much more hittable. And that was the same case with Swanson when he got to the fourth inning. He's more hittable, so. That's where I like splitting them up. Now, where I don't like it is when you do throw five guys in one game, it only takes one to have that, real disaster on the mound that could lead to the giant inning. That's where the concern comes in. And I fear that we're going to see that at some point. Now, the hope is it happens maybe in a midweek game against a team like Evansville where hopefully the offense can truly make up for that. And hopefully, hopefully it doesn't happen, but it's you
But
can't
Carl, even if
rule
it
it out.
happened once or twice, before this it was happening, the last podcast, I ripped off six. That was in one series. So, okay, if one of the, I know what you're saying. If you throw five guys, the odds that all five pitch good. If you throw three, the odds are better. I get that. But even if we give up a crooked number once or twice out of the 36 innings, it's a hell of a lot better than what we've been doing.
And
So you can't do eight of them.
generally the bats are going to be there to back it up. I mean,
Right.
and honestly, because looking at the numbers, this was the from a batting average perspective, just straight up batting average, this was actually the worst week since week one from a batting average perspective, hitting 301. But they hit 372 with runners in scoring position and were productive 65% of the time with a runner in scoring position. Overall, were productive 50% of the time. So, like, this team is making stuff happen, even if it's not exactly with your normal hits and everything. And some of that's going to come down to Ohio State's defensive blunders.
Yeah, and the
But
decision to bunt a whole lot.
yes, but it showed some of the versatility that seemed to be lacking at times early in the season, where if the team wasn't hitting, nothing was happening. We're starting to see that shift back a bit, which is a good thing.
I did a little bit of an exercise because, again, the SID, Jared sends out, in addition to his stats, he sends out a season stat PDF. Well, I have made the point of saving them from the last 3 years. And I did a comparison 20 games in between last year and this year. So I'm going to give you, so I'm going to, these are all the stats that that I recorded in the spreadsheet. It's a batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage, our hitters striking out, fielding percentage for the offense. And then for the offense for the position players, and then for the pitching, it's ERA, walks, hit by pitch, hits, strikeouts, and WHIP. That's 12 different stats. I'm just curious what you guys off the top of your heads think. How many of those are better versus worse than last year?
Ooh.
Well, the pitching, well, a lot of the pitching is going to be
Pitching.
worse. Actually, I bet a lot of the hitting, I bet a lot of them, I bet a considerable amount of them are worse last year.
One is worse.
Compared to last year?
Yes.
Really?
The only thing that's worse is that our pitchers have struck out eight fewer batters. That is it.
Oh.
Every other line. You know which one's the best? The biggest improvement? ERA.
Yeah.
20 games in last year, this team was at 6.96 in ERA. This year, they're at a flat six.
That sucks, yeah. I mean,
Walks are
that,
down, hit by
yeah.
pitch slightly down, WHIP is a bit down. Fielding percentage is better.
Huh. It was just all
967
front.
versus 959.
It was just all front loaded.
Yes, it's just the it was that ha it, all, the worst part of this was all in that first week. And this past week has picked things up. Now, overall, I would
Yeah,
say
if you were to rant this 4 games ago, though, it wouldn't have been nothing like this.
no, I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
And then the record is
Last time you
identical.
call a team
Both
meeting is when your ace is on the mound.
at 20
Once
games
again.
in, both teams are 11-9. So the record's the same. Now, again, like I said, the this that included the trip to Texas. That included what Arkansas, Dallas Baptist. Now, granted, Indiana beat Dallas Baptist, but
That's a great game.
and Arizona. So that series. So probably the comparable thing early season for Indiana is going to be this trip to UCLA. So probably need to push that one more week before we can say that it's really comparable. But at the same time, it's like I said. Well, they went to Baylor. Yeah, Baylor was not good last year.
No. No.
That was really a weak trip.
Yep.
And one of their best guys got hurt in like the first inning of the first game.
Yeah.
I remember he was out for the series.
But it probably didn't look so weak when it was scheduled.
Yeah, because it was probably scheduled 2 years in advance.
Right.
And the thing is that they're good again this year, but
Yeah.
they had their 2 years bad were this were 2 years ago and this last year. I don't think the strength of schedule is massively off. I would say it was probably a little bit stronger last year than it has been so far this year, but it's not massively off. And all those stats, that's I think is I was reassured by it. I was
Yeah.
I'm with you. I was not expecting it to be that clear.
Yeah. Especially with the similar results, the similar outcomes.
And the one that Indiana's less on doesn't actually bother me. I don't mind
No.
that they're striking out fewer guys. I kind of like to see some more contact outs happening earlier in counts.
Right. Yeah.
Save those
For me,
bullets.
it's all about situation. Runner on third, fewer than two outs, strike out all the way. Strike out double play. But beyond
But a
that,
10-pitch strikeout, I don't like 10-pitch strikeouts.
no, not so much.
I mean, there's worse things, don't get me wrong,
Right.
but
10-pitch home run.
I like a second 2-pitch ground out to second base. I will take that over a
Yes,
strikeout
I like 10
any
pitch innings on the West Coast.
day.
Those late games end earlier. I'm excited though. It should be fun. It's a good
Yes.
challenge. It's a see where we are, level type of series.
Yeah, see what did last week really mean? Is that gonna translate to a more fundamentally sound team?
You got to do it first, Carl. And we weren't doing it. This is the first
No.
time we did it. So no matter who you're playing, you could be playing. It was not like we were playing some recent teams before, but it was still sloppy as hell. So you gotta get the ship right, no matter how choppy the water is. The ship is right after these four, and then let's see what we can take it on the road.
All right. Well, I think that'll wrap us up now. So, thank you for listening to this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer and Chris Feeney, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.